While there are two play spaces, one on East 85th and one on Broadway in the 90s, we head up to the one on the east side as it has marginally cleaner sand. These indoor playgrounds are Manhattan's version of a fully equipped basement rec room. And like everything else in the big city, it's for rent. So, similar to motels with hourly rates, a 20 gets you and your charge a good 2 hours to exhaust each other on their equipment. Seema and I lift the boys onto a bright blue slide. I look over at her to gauge if she's one of those caregivers who feels compelled to stay within 2 feet of their charges at all times, tagging along on every move. "I think they should," she says, pausing, clearly trying to read me as well. I nod, waiting for the sign. "Be okay if they are together? What do you think?" "I agree," I say with relief, given Grayer's mood and Darwin's aggression. "Can I treat you to dessert?" Once we've settled at a table in full view of the slide, I pass Seema a cupcake and a napkin. "I'm glad you don't mind letting the boys play. I usually try to set Grayer free, then come up here where I can keep an eye on him and do my homework. But there's always some nosy caregiver who's like, Grayer's in the sandbox. And I'm supposed to fly across the room with a cry of, not the sandbox. I laugh, covering my mouth to keep crumbs from falling out. Seema giggles. "Yesterday, at a play date, the mother wanted me to color with Darwin, but if I put my crayon on his drawing, he screams. But she made me sit there all afternoon holding the crayon near the paper." She unwraps her cupcake. "Have you been with Grayer for very long?"
7 months. Since September. How about you?" I ask in return.
2 years now I have been with Mr. and Mrs. Zuckerman." She nods her head and her dark hair falls in front of her face. I'm guessing that she's in her early 40s. Out of the corner of my eye, I see Darwin poised on the yellow plastic step above Grayer, pulling Mr. X's tie taut around G's neck. For a brief moment, Grayer's choking, his face turning red as he reaches up his hands to clutch at his throat. Then the knot of the tie gives way in one swift tug. Darwin rips it from around Grayer's red neck and runs, laughing, to the other side of the room, disappearing into the climbing apparatus. Seema and I leap up, dispatching ourselves to the opposing fronts. "Grove, it's okay," I call out as I approach. He gives forth a blast of rage toward Darwin that silences the entire room.
"Give that back! That's my daddy's! Give it back!"
He starts to sob and shake.
"My daddy's so mad at you! He's so mad!"
He collapses, shaking with the force of his tears.
"My daddy's so mad. He's so mad."
I pull him onto my lap and start murmuring in his ear as I rock him. "You are such a good boy. Nobody is mad at you. Your daddy's not mad at you. Your mommy's not mad at you. We all love you so much, Grove." I carry him up to the food area where Seema is waiting with the tie.
"I want," he gasps, his breath coming in gulps, "my mommy."
I knot the tie gently around his neck and help him up onto one of the green benches next to me, making a pillow for him with my sweater. Seema goes over to make sure Darwin doesn't somehow hurt himself on the 3-foot slide while I rub Grayer's back as he falls asleep. I watch as she reaches out a hand to help Darwin place his legs over the top in preparation for his descent. He rejects her offer by smacking her squarely on the head, then laughs and flies down the slide. She stands for a moment with both hands on her head and then walks slowly back to our table and sits down. "Darwin seems a little intense," I say. "Actually, he seems like a potential homicidal maniac, but she must have stayed for a reason, and $10 an hour isn't enough to subject oneself to gross bodily harm."
"Oh, no. He's just having a lot of anger because he has a new baby brother."
She reaches up to rub her head. "Have you ever talked to them about how he hits you?" I ask tentatively.
"No. Well, they are so busy with the new baby, and he can be a very good boy."
She takes little breaths as she speaks. This is hardly the first time I've seen this. Every playground has at least one nanny getting the shit kicked out of her by an angry child. Clearly, she doesn't want to talk about it, so I change the topic. "You have such a nice accent." I fold up the wrapper from my cupcake into a little square.
"I moved here from San Salvador 2 years ago."
She wipes her hands with a napkin. "Do you have family there?" I ask.
"Well, my husband and sons are there."
She blinks a couple of times and looks down.
"Oh," I say. "Yes, we all came together to find work.
I was an engineer in San Salvador, but there was no more jobs and we hoped to make money here. Then my husband was rejected for the green card and had to go back with our sons because I could not work and take care of them.
How often do you see them? I ask as Grayer shifts fitfully in his sleep.
I tried to go home for 2 weeks at Christmas time, but this year Mr. and Mrs. Zuckerman needed me to go to France.
She folds and unfolds Darwin's sweater. Do you have pictures of your children? I bet they're beautiful. I'm not sure what the positive spin is on this situation or where to take this conversation.
No, I don't keep a picture on me. It's too hard. She smiles.
What about you? Do you have children?
No, me? No, thank God. We both laugh.
We share slices of our own stories, the parts of our lives the Zuckermans and the exes neither partake in nor know about, amid all the bright lights and colors, surrounded by a cacophony of screaming. It starts to snow outside the big windows, and I tuck my stocking feet beneath me while she rests her chin on her outstretched arm. Thus, I while away the afternoon with a woman who has a higher degree than I will ever receive in a subject I can't get a passing grade in, and who has been home less than 1 month in the last 24.